Hello and welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Valerie Smaldone. I came across an astounding statistic the other day I want to share with you. In this country, over 43.5 million people suffer from mental illness. And further, 20% of young people up to age 18 have a mental health condition. Combined, 70 million people are prescribed drugs for their mental illness. And my next guest, Lauren Pauley, who is a certified medical speech-language pathologist and life coach, has just written a book, The Other Side of Bipolar. Diagnosed with bipolar as a teenager and put on a regimen of drugs for 16 years. Today, Lauren Pauley is medication-free. Welcome, Lauren, to America Weekend.
Oh, welcome. Thank you. Thank you so much, Valerie, for having me on. I'm excited to have this conversation with you and see what we can uncover.
Yeah, and those figures I mentioned are really astounding, huge.
Yeah, they're huge and they're so sad. To me, it's just fascinating looking at the quickness in which diagnosis, labels, and medication are really thrown at people these days, especially our younger population.
Yes, that's true, and I agree with that. And before we get into your story, can you briefly define the diagnosis of bipolar? What does that mean?
Bipolar means that you fluctuate either rapidly or over the course of a couple of days from very, very highs to very, very lows. So you have manic states, which are fast-moving, fast speech, little need for sleep, and then you kind of vacillate from that to depressed states, which is really, people think of depression as sadness, which can be a component to it, but from my experience and from the people that I work with, depression is really this void. It's kind of a black hole energy where it's devoid of any energy, apathy. You don't really have an interest in doing anything. So the bipolar is not just having the depression, it's also having the mania as well and bouncing back and forth between the two.
Okay, well, thank you for that information. So take me back to your teen years when you were diagnosed. What was going on for you then?
Oh, I was diagnosed when I was 14, and that diagnosis came after I had suicide attempts. For me, kind of looking back at that time, so much of what I was going through was kind of social anxiety, social awkwardness. I didn't really feel like I fit in with my peer group. And I was extremely sensitive and aware of all the interesting things that go on in middle school, the bullying, the teasing, that sort of thing. And I just kind of had this weird thing where I didn't want to tell anybody it was going on. It felt very embarrassing to admit that I was having these issues. So I hid it extremely well. I kind of plastered a smile on my face and just pretended everything was okay. Meanwhile, inside, there were massive things going on in my inner world. And I think that's something so indicative of what we all go through, whether you're diagnosed or not, these kind of weird thoughts that come through, these weird perceptions that we have of ourselves, and everywhere that we don't really fit in, and we make ourselves wrong for that.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, what you're describing sounds pretty much like almost everybody I know.
No.
It's kind of normal.
It is kind of normal, you know, and it's fascinating because that is like status quo. And then you add someone who's aware, sensitive, and extremely empathetic on top of that, and you have like a recipe for disaster, which is so sad because it's actually a recipe for greatness if you're in there ahead of time doing preventative measures. If there was an education piece of like, you're just aware of the environment, you're actually very caring, very empathetic. It becomes easier to actually handle that level of awareness in the world and something that you can actually utilize, which is kind of the stance that I take now and what I teach other people.
So you were put on medication as a teen. What were the side effects of the medication?
Oh, horrible. There was one point in time where I was swallowing 14 pills a day. That was kind of my all-time high. I had hair loss. My vision went while I was driving a car. That was very scary. I had cystic acne kind of from head to toe. My entire back was covered, my face, my neck, my shoulders. I had very, very dry mouth. I lost my appetite, so I stopped eating. And kind of one of the bigger things, I started getting essential tremors, which is this constant movement in the body. I was a ballerina, and it really took away what I love the most. My sanctuary was putting on my pointe shoes and going to ballet class. That's where I felt at home. And with those tremors, along with the dry mouth and everything else, it became hard to do the one thing where I was actually getting a sense of peace.
So it didn't sound like you were in a wellness state at all.
Not at all, not at all. And it was fascinating. And that's kind of what the red flag that my mom kept talking about during those years is, it's fascinating when you have one side effect from a drug, and instead of going, oh, maybe you're on too much, or there may be a different way about this, let's add a different prescription drug to treat the side effect of that drug. And that's how I ended up with those 14 pills. And my mom actually made a chart one day of, like, we start here with the lithium for mood balance, and that causes the essential tremors. And then we zag over here for the one drug that's supposed to stop the tremors. And then that causes the acne. So then we're going to go over here to your acne medication. So it was this constant kind of downward spiral once the medication was started.
Certainly, and as I'm sure it really affected your social life and your friendships and all of that. So you were on these drugs for a long time. How did you begin to say, I don't want to do this any longer?
I was so lucky. I moved to Florida when I was 20, halfway through my education, and I met a new psychiatrist down there, and his name popped out of the phone book because it was said holistic psychiatry. And I had no idea what holistic meant, but I just knew I had to go do that. And he was the first doctor, and I was diagnosed when I was 14. This was at age 20. 6 years later, he was the first person who talked to me about diet, exercise, stress relief techniques, and also worked on personality development, educational testing, and really planted the seed of, you don't have to live a small life and just suffer with this diagnosis. You can actually succeed if you apply yourself. And for me, that was a game changer. It actually took me out of survival mode and into what would I like to create with my life. And that was so different after 6 years of, don't challenge yourself. The shoe will drop at any moment. You'll always need medication. He was really the one who lit a new path for me.
Wow, that's a huge shift for you.
Yeah.
And it's really identifying the positive side of
Yes.
all of this. And you say in your book that some very creative and influential people are believed to have been bipolar.
Oh my goodness. Yes, there's so many of them. If you look over history, like Alexander the Great, it's fascinating because mental illness is just up right now in society, and you're hearing a lot of famous people who go through it, a lot of artistic and creative types. And it's interesting to look at where the line of creative potency and creative ability really gets twisted into this mad state. And what my work is really teaching people how to harness that and unleash it in a way where you're generating your life and creating it, not going towards destructive patterns.
Then what are some of the myths that are common surrounding mental illness?
I think kind of the biggest myth is that it is like a life sentence and you're never going to be able to get over it. And I have just found that that is not the case. There are so many ways in which you can develop yourself, your inner state, your health, and your wellness overall that allow you to really thrive in your life. I think that's the biggest thing with this label is you're boxed in such a way where it's like the rest of your life is going to be dictated by it. It's number one on the list of your personality traits. And that's just not the case at all.
I'm speaking with Lauren Polly, whose book The Other Side of Bipolar is about to come out, right? It's about to be released.
It's up on Amazon currently,
Okay.
and it's actually getting printed this week. I'm off to the printers to watch it pop out.
Oh, exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you.
In the book, Lauren, you talk about a lot of different things. One of the ones that attracted me, the five tips for being a social butterfly. A lot of people have a lot of anxiety surrounding social events.
Oh my goodness, yes. And again, that goes back to how aware are you of everyone around you? And this is what we talked about at the beginning of the interview. If you are sensitive, you are aware and perceptive of your environment, a lot of times those nervous butterflies don't even belong to you. There's a lot of awkwardness that goes into social interactions. Part of my background, my medical background, is as a speech pathologist. So I work with communication a lot. And for me, that communication is really how you show up and engage with other people. So being able to be yourself in a group of people without losing yourself to those nerves But actually being whatever it is you are, like, are you fun? Are you more quiet and receptive and listening? And do you have just kind of this natural innate gift of floating around a room and leaving everybody happier, more peaceful, and feeling like they've been seen? And I think that's a huge thing, because if you have someone that's like a wonderful social butterfly person, they have an ability to make you really feel like you're included, you're noticed, and you're really valued for whatever it is you're gifting in the conversation.
Some very interesting ideas, I have to tell you. And I think everybody can benefit from reading this book. We all have anxiety of some kind.
Yes.
And congratulations on your journey, Lauren, and the new book, The Other Side of Bipolar. Thanks, Lauren Pauley.
Oh, thank you, Valerie, so much.
It's America Weekend. I'm Valerie Smaldone. This is the Envision Radio Network.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. Have you ever had an earworm? Well, I bet you have, and you can't get it out of your head.
Ew, that's disgusting.
What is it? Well, it's a song that just gets stuck. Here's the science of it. You hear it once, and when that tune gets stuck in your head, it is there to stay. It's actually a songwriter's dream to write a song you can't forget. So what do? They create an auditory image of the song.
You're a genius.
First off, the end of the song reminds you of the first of the song, so it's like a repeat button. It just plays over and over and over. But get this, you may complain about it, but most earworms are thought to be fun and pleasant.
That's the genius of the system.
I hate you.
What's the cheap psychological trick? Earworms make you feel good. At least you're mentally singing instead of worrying. Check out my book, Cheap Psychological Tricks for Parents, at drbuff.com.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit happylandaudio.com. That's happylandaudio.com.
Order in the court.
This is attorney Jay Coleman with The Final Verdict. After Mark Templin received a CT scan, he was told he had brain cancer and 6 months to live. During the next 6 months, he quit his job and sold his truck. But when he didn't die, doctors admitted a mistaken diagnosis. There was no cancer. Legally, is this a no harm done situation, or did Mark suffer real damages? The final verdict after this.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit happylandaudio.com. That's happylandaudio.com.
A judge awarded Mark $400 a day for 150 days of missed work and inflicted distress, a total of $60,000. And that's the final verdict.